From a world of silence, a story of horror. A story that could only be told in the clicks and grunts and hand motions of someone signing. That is the passionate and nearly silent narration in the emotional new film Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. The film tells the story of how victims of sexual abuse in a Catholic deaf school in Milwaukee were able to simply tell their story from behind walls of literal silence, the silence of deafness, victimization, and the silence of shame. The perpetrator in the Milwaukee cases was a priest named Father Murphy, and Total Murphy abused over 200 deaf children placed in his care. Filmmaker Alex Gibney decided to make this challenging film and to report Father Murphy's history of abuse and the church's decision to cover it up. He was drawn to this because he was haunted by the story and the courage of the victims, willing to speak silently in sign language to find justice. Gibney is the Oscar-winning director of Taxi to the Dark Side, Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, and many other films. Mea Maxima Culpa opens in theaters tomorrow, and as we learned when we spoke with him, as a filmmaker, Gibney loves a challenge.
Well, I mean, I think one of the challenges in this film was to get into a world that I really didn't know very much about, which is the world of the deaf.
Sure.
And that was a big challenge. In fact, you know, from a filmmaking perspective, we spent a lot of time doing tests and trying to figure out just how to shoot the interviews with the deaf survivors. And we ended up shooting it with four cameras. I had to be in a separate room in order to occasion this thing because I wanted to have an ongoing conversation. So I wanted simultaneous translation with a signing translator. So it ended up being quite complicated.
And you've got the image of the signing, the voices of the interpreters. You've got the characters themselves and their emotions on their faces.
The emotions on their faces, which are so resonant, and you're drawn into that language. But also, we made a big point of having a microphone in the room, so which the deaf people were like, "Why are you miking me? I'm deaf." But you can hear the sounds, the clapping, the grunts, and that testifies to the difficulty of communicating with the hearing world. So there was something important about those sounds too.
This is a story of people powerless in a sense a cave and exploited by a character who they would otherwise have trusted. What did you find in the story of Father Murphy?
Well, Father Murphy is an interesting but also appalling character. I mean, many of the worst clerical sex abusers turned out not to be the kind of people who are Gollum-like in a corner someplace, you know, muttering about precious. These people are very charismatic, they're charming, and that's their cover.
Murphy would hug children. All the kids just loved him. They always flocked to him. He would play with the kids and the nuns would stand around just watching and smiling. I wanted Murphy's attention like all the other kids. I needed him. He was like a second father to me.
And this was a guy, Father Murphy, who had raised tremendous amounts of money for this deaf school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but he turned it into a kind of private chicken coop for, you know, the wolf or the fox that he was. And that was the terrifying part. So there are these two sides to Father Murphy, the public side and the private side. And that's what a lot of this clerical sex abuse is about.
One of the things that's so chilling about this film is that some of the stories, the people associate their abuse with their condition in a sense, that there is something about this closed community that implied that they deserved to be exploited in this way. How did people deal with those kinds of psychological scars?
Well, for these guys, to finally be able to get it out was so important, and it saved them emotionally. But then they also felt they were on a mission, which was to save others. That was really their quest because they knew that others were being abused, so they needed to speak out. You know, we call it Silence in the House of God, the subtitle of the film. Obviously, it's the silence of the church in face of this criticism and in face of this abuse. But it's also the silent ones who had no voice, who were determined to have their voices heard.
I was afraid to tell my mother because I didn't think she would believe me. She'd say a priest would never do something like that to children. I kept it a secret.
And for 30 years, they were trying to do it. And now, finally, their voices are being heard. They feel pretty good.
Documentary film
directors and producers and makers talk about this a lot, that you know, when you're in the middle of it, you're constantly agonizing. Is there a film here? Do we have a film here? Is there? I mean, is it here? I can't tell. Did you have any of that with this?
I did. I mean, I knew that the story was powerful. I read the story in Laurie Goodstein's piece in the New York Times, and the story was so appalling, the idea of these 200 deaf kids being abused, and also the connections to the Vatican. So that, I think, was, I thought there was something there. The question was getting there, and there were two challenges. One was penetrating the world of the deaf. The other big challenge from a storytelling perspective was seeing if there was some way to balance narratively the intimate story of these survivors with the more panoramic story of the global cover-up by the Vatican. And that was a big challenge. But luckily, we were helped by, you know, as documentarians often are, by serendipity. You go and you look and you discover surprising things. One of the things we discovered was while we were in Italy, we had heard about this deaf school in Verona, where the very same thing had happened that had happened in Milwaukee. And it was a kind of beautiful simplicity then to show that this was a global pattern. And that's one of the things that helped us reconcile the two aspects of the story.
Describe an interview or a character or one of the survivors who really connected with you in a way that maybe even surprised you.
I think it was Terry Kohut, because Terry Kohut was so deeply honest. And to be truthful, he wasn't one of the original whistleblowers. Actually, even though he had been abused at St. John's, he came back and was teaching there and hadn't raised the ruckus about Father Murphy. It took him a long time to really reckon with that. But once he did so with such honesty, such force, and such generosity, and then with such determination to make a difference. So in that sense, he's like all of us. He's an everyday hero, somebody that we all could be.
And it's amazing how much meaning there is in those sounds of signing and making that point and
you know, when he talks about how he needed to get it out, his hands explode and you hear him go pah. And the other thing too, you know, it would be easy, having been through what he's been through, to devolve into bitterness. But you can see on his face this tremendous sense of joy. You can see the sadness, you can see the rage, but also the sense of joy and wonder, which he can still experience. And that, to me, may be the most meaningful and moving thing about him.
Well, you can experience it in your latest film. Alex Gibney is Oscar-winning director of Taxi to the Dark Side, Enron, The Smartest Guys in the Room, many other films, but his newest is called Mea Maxima Culpa, Silence in the House of God. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.